Isn't today great? Today is such a great day. Everything is so great.
We're going to have a lot of fun. We got some wonderful people for you.
All you mommies and daddies out there who complain to the radio station, I got something to say to you.
And the first thing you've got to do is say the call letters properly. Okay?
It's an incredible metamorphosis of love and emotion and sensitivity and tenderness and fun and joy and happiness.
Did you know that this show represents health and hope?
Oh, yeah, it's a great day as we continue our 10th anniversary celebration for compelling conversation on the Amy Beth Arkwright Show, weaving together a mosaic of voices from the arts, politics, personal growth, and justice. How are you? One of those compelling conversations coming up with author Patrick H. Moore. We'll take on the cultural cacophony, surround ourselves with some great music, including your Forgotten 45s. And by the way, you're in the mix, too, if you're listening live. It's Thursday, April 27th, high noon out west. 2 p.m. Central and 3 o'clock here in the East. Our number in motion, 347-857-4505. Tagging along for the live ride, avail yourself of the PopNet chat box and or the Facebook page. Twitter, of course, at 24/7 Oasis. At AB Writes, all being helmed by the talented TCS crew, Trudy and Aurora in the booth, and Mel at headquarters. Show brought to you in part by Old Navy. There's still time to spring forward for great sales and savings at Old Navy. Also at PopNet, it's arts, culture, conversation, on air, online, up and running 24/7, featuring the Amy Beth Arkwright Show and those robust roundtables. Here's truly in the midst of a couple of doozies, as per usual. Hey, by the way, thanks so much to the folks who came out last weekend at the Litchfield, Connecticut Writers Roundtable. I was so happy to be involved and meet and greet and mingle with some readers and fans of the Eliza Gordon Mystery Series. A few, a little miffed that there may not be another one in the offing. Hey, never say never, but I am involved in a new project and details to follow, as they say. So stay tuned, and thanks again for coming out. And speaking of making those great transitions, our guest, Patrick H. Moore, is a private investigator, sentencing mitigation specialist, and the founder of the All Things True Crime blog, who has made the transition to fiction writing. So he knows something about making those transitions. Delighted to welcome. The new book is out. It's called 27 Days. Happy to welcome Patrick H. Moore to the show. Patrick, thank you so much for coming on. And you've been on before to talk about true crime, so we're happy to have you to talk about your new venture. And congrats.
Well, thank you very much, Amy.
Happy to have you here. Let's talk a little bit about making those transitions. I know you were a true crime aficionado. We've had you in past years on the show to talk about various hot cases. That was a very popular blog, which I understand is not as robust as it once was in terms of activity, but very popular. What made you make the transition to fiction?
Well, it's a kind of an interesting story. I originally started the crime blog, allthingscrimeblog.com, in about 2013. And my purpose was, I had a friend, Michael Sellers, who was an experienced blogger, and I was thinking about indie publishing a crime novel called Cicero's Dead. And I didn't have any solid plans, but I was considering it. And so Michael Sellers said to me, well, you have to have a blog because you have to, you know, build a following. And he taught me how to build a following on Twitter and on the blog itself. And so when we started out, we thought it was going to be 50% literary crime fiction and 50% true crime. But as it turned out, the way it transpired is people were far more interested in true crime. In fact, people were fascinated with true crime. A lot of interesting cases were coming down the pike then. The Jodi Arias case was one of them. And so I had some excellent contributors, so we started producing a lot of content. We would generally do about 3 blogs a day, 3 articles a day. And this went on for a long time, and the blog got slowly but surely, it got more and more popular. I think a lot of it was because, well, 2 factors. I had really excellent writers for contributors, and I would do the daily 1,000-word true crime post. And I'd always talk a little bit about myself. I would try to be extremely neighborly. And, you know, it's kind of getting to know mid-America in a way. And so I was the person on the blog who, my job was to get along with everyone, the conservatives, the liberals, the progressives.
Yeah.
It didn't matter. That was my job. And so I did that, and I worked like a crazy man. And I worked about 7 hours a day. 7 days a week for the first couple of years on it.
While you were still doing your private investigating work, too, right?
Right, but to set the record straight, I'm an investigator, but I'm not technically a private investigator. I work for a licensed private investigator. But I do mostly sentencing mitigation work. That's my specialty.
Okay. Fair enough. And Mac plays nice with true crime as well. So you decided, so Cicero's Dead was actually the first book that involved this private eye that you created, Nick Crane, who we now see in 27 Days. And the fascinating thing about the novel, I will say, is it's kind of a combo. It's got that fiction noir feel to it, the hard-boiled folks like Elmer Leonard, Mickey Spillane, but you also have a political thriller thrown into it, so there's a lot of contemporary stuff. How did you balance those two kind of genres and crisscross them together?
Well, that's such a good question, Amy. Thanks for asking that question. Great question. What I thought, when I wrote Cicero's Dead, it was indie published, and it did surprisingly well, sold a lot of electronic copies. But I felt for my next book, I wanted to do something that seemed more socially relevant. Cicero's Dead was just a regular, you know, it was a good, robust true crime story, very exciting. It wasn't about, you know, any topic that I thought would be, was really socially relevant. So in writing the next Nick Crane novel, I wanted to write a book that was a hard-boiled, as you say, and that's, you know, very, very true, hard-boiled noirish crime novel that also was socially relevant. And that's how The Strange Hybrid came to be, that is 27 Days. And other people have commented on that, that it's unusual to have a hard-boiled crime novel, which is also a socially relevant political thriller.
But you went out to do it, and you definitely, if you read it, you will find some very intriguing parallels to what's going on in our country today with the Principals, which is this weird terrorist, political terrorist kind of group, and what is their slogan? To make America safe again, I think is so.
Make America safe again. Yes, that was the slogan of one of the principals, fiendish woman named Margarita Ferguson, who has it in for the protagonist Nick Crane and wants to get her mitts on him and then, you know, treat him to a little torture and a slow and painful death.
Right, he's going to go through some things. That's. or she wants them to. It's fascinating. What are your influences? I mean, so you have obviously the hard-boiled edge, but you also, so tell us a little bit about the writers that influenced you.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's another great, great question. When I wrote Cicero's Dead, at that point, I had only really read a few crime fiction writers. I read all of the early Dennis Lehane, his Patrick Kinsey stories. And I read quite a few James Lee Burke, Dave Robichaux novels. And so those were really my influences. And anybody who's read Lehane or James Lee Burke, they know that these are some you know, scary and violent stories that they write with very dangerous adversaries and, you know, kind of like the antithesis of the cozy crime mystery.
That I write, yeah.
Yeah, and I read the first in your series. I liked it a great deal. But it's a different approach to crime writing.
It's a different genre,
right. And so what happened, I really, when I began writing Cicero's Dead, I was kind of emulating, in some respects, Dennis Lehane and James Lee Burke, because they were the only literary crime fiction writers that I was really familiar with.
Have you gone back since, like, now that you're in it, to read other people like Spillane and Elmer Leonard and other?
You know, I haven't read much Spillane or Leonard. I've read a little. I have read quite a bit of Dashiell Hammett and quite a bit of Raymond Chandler. I just recently actually got through for the first time The Long Goodbye, which is, you know, probably Chandler's masterpiece. And it was, you know, truly a, you know, remarkable crime novel, I thought. What I've done in the last...
Have you done any James M. Cain? Have you into that?
Absolutely, yeah. James M. Cain was... Actually, he was the one that I read long before I read Dennis Lehane or James Lee Burke.
Yeah, fascinating.
And I've gone back and I've read some James Cain in the last, you know, in the last few years. But since I got my publisher, I've been reading quite a few of the books that they publish, which tend to be hard-boiled literary, you know, crime thrillers of one kind or another. And so I've read a lot of them, and I've read a lot of other contemporary crime writers. And I've discovered that this genre of contemporary crime writing, it's like there are thousands of these people. It's
there
like,
sure
it's,
are.
It's like the competition is incredible to get one's book to stand out, you know, amidst an ocean of crime writers, and many of whom are very skillful and write excellent books.
It's hard. You're right. I mean, it's easier in some ways because there are a lot of publishers that have cropped up over the last several years, smaller publishers that will take on indie authors. But the promotion is still on the author's side for the most part. You really have to work hard at it. So it's hard to talk about that. How do you stand out? Well, you have a platform built in with your All Things True Crime. That helps a little bit, right? You have a platform and an audience. What else
do you do? It helps a little. But mostly I've just become much more socially active on social media than I had been in the, you know, over the past few years when I was focusing mostly on writing. So I've been, you know, just, you know, trying to build, you know, a following of my own with, you know, with some success. I have one good possibility. I know a fellow named Peter Hoffman, who is an executive producer in Hollywood for the last, 30 years, I would say. And he's with a new film production company, Luminosity Entertainment LLC. And it appears to be very well funded, and it has some, you know, people, well-known names in Hollywood who are on the board of directors and are handling it. I'm not exactly sure what Peter Hoffman is doing, but he referred to it in email as his company. And so I gifted him with a copy of 27 Days, which will arrive at his house in Los Angeles today.
And good luck.
If he likes it, he will, suggest to his company that, hey, maybe we want to pick up an option on this. Maybe we want to make a film or a TV series.
So give me the fantasy possibility. You never know. Exactly. You got to try. Give me your fantasy casting. Who do you see as Nick Crane?
That's such a good question. And it's one I can never answer. If it were the old days, I would say Nick Nolte would be the best candidate to play Nick Crane.
Yeah,
I can't imagine a better candidate. Or Kevin Bacon, if you like roughened him up a bit, which you know he is in, you know, in some of his films. So I kind of see Nick Crane as
I was going to say, did you see Kevin Bacon in City on the Hill, that Showtime series? He was definitely. I could see that. Have you seen that series?
No, I haven't seen that series. But that's a weakness of mine, is I'm so busy reading and writing that I just don't watch series as much as most people.
Yeah, well,
I'm undoubtedly missing a lot of good stuff.
He would be good. He plays a rough and tumble rogue FBI agent in the, 90s. I guess it's set in the 90s in Boston. Take a look at that. Showtime. It's a Showtime show. I don't know if you get Showtime, but you might be able to find it
on
download.
And what's it called, Amy?
It's called City on the Hill or City on a Hill. I don't know which.
Okay, I'll check that out. I do like the idea of Kevin Bacon as Nick Crane because Bacon he's a very versatile actor.
Yes,
and,
he is.
And Nick Crane is a versatile kind of private investigator.
Yeah,
it kind of does seem like a good match. But I'm sure there are lots of other actors who I'm not even aware of who might, you know, be good candidates for the role.
Oh, I'm sure. And of course, if you're lucky enough to get it optioned and it goes to production, I know a little bit about things getting optioned and not going anywhere. But
of course,
they'll help you with the casting. I just like to play fantasy casting myself. That's a game I play with my guests sometimes, or myself sometimes. You know? And of course, as the years go by, like you said, years ago Nick Nolte would have been good, or if something gets picked up and it's sitting, you know, in purgatory for a while, by the time it gets ready to go, if it does get ready to go, the person will have already aged out, you know, so.
Right.
Yeah, so it's just a fun kind of game to play with. But so you obviously have ideas for Nick to continue as part of a series, because a series is always good, and I've known this from my own experience. You get people hooked, they want more.
The book has received, people are just, you know, dying for the next Nick Crane novel. Fortunately, and this is a little bit confusing, but for the listening audience to understand, 27 Days is actually the second book in the Nick Crane versus the Principals three-book series. The first book is called Rogues and Patriots. And when I wrote 27 Days, Rogues and Patriots was being agented all around New York by an agent at that point. It went to, I believe, 60 publishers. No one bit. And in the meantime, I wrote 27 Days. And then a writer friend of mine, Charles Salzberg, recommended me to my publisher, Down and Out Books. And so I sent them 27 days. So currently, it turned out, you know, it's kind of interesting. It's of course, as we all know, it's very hard to be objective about one's own literary work. But in going back and looking at Rogues and Patriots, I realized it needed a lot of work. There was some overwriting. It had problems. And so I've gone through it several times, and I just finished up this morning, in fact, going through it one more time. And now I just need to read it, and I'm going to send it off to the publisher. But it is actually a prequel to 27 Days.
Got it.
That is, yeah, it occurs in time before 27 Days.
Okay.
And it will solve a lot of the mysteries that exist in some readers' minds as, you know, what came before? What came before 27 Days? Those questions will be answered. And then the third book in the series, which I've tentatively entitled Giant Steps, that will be the third book in the Nick Crane versus the Principals series.
All right.
And then after that, I'm not sure what will come next.
Have you written that one, or you're just working on it now?
I've written about 50 pages. It's slowly coming together. I'm not very good at planning out an entire story ahead of time. In fact, I'm really bad at it. And so typically when I start a story, I'll have some ideas and I'll get started and I'll start writing. And then as I write, the ideas, the plot ideas, the storyline ideas will slowly come to me. At least that's been the case up to this point. And I certainly hope the storyline ideas come to me for Giant Steps because, I think 27 Days and Rogues and Patriots, they're very different books, but I think they're both well done. And obviously, Giant Steps has to be well done.
Right, of course. It's hard. Yeah, that's right. You got to follow it up with the next one. But I always say I'm building and each one gets better, I hope. But then again, like you said, it's hard to be objective about your own work. But it's good that you're on a roll. And what's your process? Because you do other work too. So a lot of people are always fascinated by the process, the writing process, which sometimes it can be drudgery on a daily basis, but it's also there's alchemy involved and all of that. But what do you do? How do you balance your time with your other job that you're doing? And I mean, do you have a set time where you sit down and say, that's another great question, Amy. Well, I'm here all week. This is what I do.
Well, I know. Well, you know just what to ask, and that's really helpful. What I do, my writing schedule is erratic. I know many professional writers, you know, they write for 8 hours a day, day after day, 5 or 6 days a week. What I do is I tend to go through periods where I'll work, you know, 3 to 4 hours a day, 5 or 6 days a week, for as long as I can keep it up, but it's somewhat affected by my job responsibilities. Because I'm still working about two-thirds time as a sentencing mitigation guy. And so, you know, when you do this kind of work, every case is, you know, it's not life and death, not literally, but symbolically or metaphorically it is, because, you know, we're trying to keep our clients from serving long prison sentences. And we usually do succeed in getting nice prison reductions for them, not always, but most of the time. But if I get really busy with work cases, then that cuts into my writing time. Lately what I've been doing for the last 6 months, I've been writing at night. I start at 6 o'clock. You know, I do whatever I need to do during the day, do some gardening, do whatever job work I have to do, and, of course, errands and all the everyday things of life. And then I'll start writing at 6 and try to work till 10. And so that I've been pretty successful at that for the last several months. So that's my current writing schedule.
Okay. Well, that's a lot. That's a pretty big momentum because even some people who write full-time will only write like 3 to 4 hours a day.
I know. I am amazed by professional writers who can write 8 hours a day, day after day.
Yeah. And I've never been able
I can
to do
that occasionally, but that's only if I'm doing revisions. And for me, and for my work, you know, like 27 days, you know, every page has probably been written 20 times. It didn't start out being what it is now.
But
for me, what's hardest is writing good first draft. And once I have a first draft in place, then the editing process, I find it's pretty enjoyable. And it's definitely easier.
The revision.
For me, writing first draft.
Yeah, they always say writing is rewriting. But the adage is all first drafts are lousy, but you have to get it out and then go back. But you got to get something on the page and then play with it. And I think the longer I've been writing, the easier it does become to revise or the more I want to do it. where I think when I was younger and first starting, it was sort of like, I'm done, you know, which you're not after the first draft, obviously.
Oh, sure, absolutely. When I wrote a few novels way back, you know, 20 or 30 years ago, and at that point, I didn't have anywhere near the patience I have now to write and rewrite and then rewrite some more. And that's partly, I've learned a lot about rewriting from my job, because I write federal sentencing memorandums. That's my main task on the job. And a federal sentencing memorandum, you know, obviously it has to be good, and it has to be, you have to perfect them as much as possible within reason. And so when I started working for my boss's company, John Brown and Associates, 20 years ago, he edited the heck out of my early sentencing memorandums. And it was hard to bear sometimes because, but, you know, basically he was always right because he was an expert in this. But it definitely got me in the habit of writing and rewriting and trying to truly perfect whatever it is I'm working on. And I became, I think, you know, hopefully a little better at being objective about my own work.
Right. Good. The process. The process is everything. I always tell people, you fall into the fall in love with the process, you can't go wrong, even when the writing isn't so great, because you'll keep going back. You'll keep trying. You'll keep working on it. But you have to really like it. A lot of people think it's glamorous. They think they're romantic. I don't know why people romanticize it, because there's a lot of hard work involved, and there's no guarantee that you're going to be successful. So you got to really love what you're doing. Obviously, you do. It sounds like you do. The Nick Crane sounds like a keeper in terms of a character, which is nice, because people will get into it and look forward to the next one, which is nice. The book is called 27 Days. The author is Patrick H. Moore. We can find out more about it, you said, at True Crime, right? The True Crime blog?
Yeah. Well, you can access it from the True Crime, from allthingscrimeblog.com, or it's available on Amazon, of course, and it's also available directly from my publisher, Down and Out Books. And if someone wishes to pick up a copy from Down and Out Books, you know, if you buy the paperback copy, they give you a free electronic version.
Oh, great. Down and Out Books. So, okay, we'll get that down, too. Okay, so it's either
Down and Out Books,
allthingscrime.com or Down and Out Books.
Allthingscrimeblog.com.
Allthingscrimeblog.com. And we'll post that details for folks when we get the podcast up and running, which will be probably later today or tomorrow. Patrick H. Moore, hey, thanks so much for coming back. I mean, we missed you. You've been on before with us to talk about those hot crime stories, but it's a pleasure to see your new transition and your new career, or new chapter in your career, we should say. It all ties together, I guess. But good luck with it. The book is 27 Days. Patrick, thanks so much for coming on. Really appreciate it.
Well, thanks for having me, Amy. I appreciate it, and this was lots of fun.
Lots of fun indeed. Take care, my friend. We will post all the details for you. That's Patrick Moore, and the book is 27 Days. On the Amy Beth Arkwright Show, love to get you guys into the mix. Feel free to call us, 347-857-4505. Facebook page, pop in the chat box available. You're taking along for the live ride. And, of course, you know Twitter. It's AB Writes. Get into the conversation on the Amy Beth Arkwright Show.
Bystander, in a hard place, and I'm down on my luck. Yes, I'm down on my luck. Well, I'm down on my luck. I'm hiding in Honduras. I'm a desperate man. And lawyers, guns, and money. This shit has hit the fan. All right, and lawyers, guns, and money. Guns and money.
Cyndi Lauper with a shout-out to Rose on the Amy Beth Arquay Show. The Spinners, It's a Shame, and Oren Zevon's classic Lawyers, Guns, and Money. What do those three have in common? They're all Rock and Roll Hall of Fame nominees for the class of 2023. The fan vote, by the way, in case you're interested, still open today and tomorrow. It closes April 28th. Your chance to vote for your favorites, up to five entries each day. So today and tomorrow. And there's some great artists there. Cyndi Lauper, I think she's pretty high on the leaderboard. The Spinners, if you're interested in them, this is their second try at getting in. And the fan vote is only part of the vote, but they're not doing so well in the vote. And Oren Zevon, the late great singer-songwriter, is pretty high up there as well. Other folks in the mix include Rage Against the Machine, Missy Elliott, Sheryl Crow, George Michael. And on we go. So check it out if you're inclined, Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, the fan vote. And speaking of fans and readers, thanks again going out to Patrick H. Moore, the founder of the very popular allthingscrimeblog.com. And he's got a new book out called 27 Days. Find out more about it at the blog. We'll post all the details for you when the podcast becomes available. Anything, everything on your mind, let's get rolling. Twitter, AB Wright, phone line 347-857-4505, Facebook page, PopNet Chatbox available. A couple of folks chiming in today, Carrie and the PopNet Chatbox, thank you so much. Great interview. I'll check out Patrick's book, I Like Your Style. Thank you, Carrie. Appreciate it. And Fritz says, a big problem with the election. Joe Biden announcing his campaign, not so great for the Democrats because they're going to make a big deal about his age. and I don't think it's going to work out too well, especially if Trump is not the nominee. Yeah, I kind of think that may be an issue for sure, and I kind of think on a rare one, maybe early, it's early in the game, but I don't think Trump is going to be the nominee. I think he's going to have too many legal woes. I think somebody else is going to emerge. I'm not so sure it's going to be Ron DeSantis, who I think is more like the Scott Walker of this cycle, but we'll see. He's about to announce, I guess, on the heels, he's in Israel right now for a fact-finding tour or show his international skills, gravitas overseas, hanging out with Netanyahu, another guy with problems. But he is being sued by Disney for all his nonsense. The abortion bill that he signed, very draconian with only a six-week window, is going to come back to bite him, I think. So I don't think it's going to be that easy for him. But if he emerges as a nominee, Trump will probably, I believe, even with his legal woes, wind up running as a third party, and that might be a spoiler. That's probably the easiest way around the situation with Biden's age. Otherwise, it could be a problem. But we'll see. They're going to try to make a boogie woman out of Kamala Harris, as we know. But I'm not so sure that's going to work either. I think her popularity will increase, too, as we go with more with these issues that are so oppressive to people, including Republicans, like the gun issue and the abortion issue, climate, et cetera. But we'll see how the Democrats play it. Still early in the game. Be vigilant, as we always say. Anything else? The big case, of course, going on right now is the E. Jean Carroll rape/defamation case against Trump. It's a civil case. We've talked about this many times before. The statute of limitations has run out on the criminal case, but it's very dynamic. I've been following it in the reports because, unfortunately, New York, we're behind the times here, kids, do not have cameras in the courtroom, and that will be a fascinating case to watch. Trump, as you know, we've talked about this on Podstream a few times this week, or last week as well, is a no-show. He didn't show up. The judge, who's very annoyed with him because he's making these social media comments through his Truth Social, lambasting and very negative comments, of course, towards E. Jean Carroll, continuing the defamation process as we speak. But apparently some people who are following it, and I've been trying to follow some of these live reports, have told us about just how crazy it is. Now, Anna Ivey, who apparently has been watching live updates, or she's reporting live updates from the New York Times, calls her E. Jean Carroll is a goddamn national hero, and they're repeating what was going on. According to the New York Times, Taka Pina, that's Trump's lawyer, asked Carroll whether she screamed for help. You know, she says she was in the dressing room of Bergdorf Goodman when he raped her. "I'm not a screamer," she said. "You can't beat up on me for not screaming." Taka Pina's comments was he wasn't beating up on her, and Carroll replied that women often keep silent about their attacks because they fear being asked what they could have done to stop one. "He raped me whether I screamed or not," she said loudly. This woman is a tough cookie, and I think it's going to go over because, again, it's a civil case. It's preponderance of the evidence, not beyond a reasonable doubt. We'll see if he shows. And he could wind up being held in contempt, I think. I mean, a lot of people would not be given as much latitude as he gets. You know, I love it his supporters always say there's a two-tier system. Indeed, there is. He's been getting so many free passes for 77 years. It's unbelievable. Twitter, AV Wright, phone line 347-857-4505. But the cast of characters that will be entering the Republican nomination process, Asa Hutchinson announced yesterday that he's in. And he's no spring chicken either. Nikki Haley, of course, who actually went on television and talked about that Biden will probably be dead before his second term is over at the age of 86, which I think is a crass way of doing it, but it's something that's going to hang over the Republican Party. So it's getting pretty crowded. Pence is supposed to throw his hat in, and, of course, maybe Christie and maybe Chris Sununu. I think we'll be in trouble if it's somebody like Chris Sununu because he's young and more reasonable sounding, but we'll see what happens. And, of course, DeSantis. They say mid-May. We'll see. Getting mighty crowded, kids. Weigh in on the Amy Beth Arkowitz Show.
Thank you. 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock, rock. 5, 6, 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock, rock. 9, 10, 11 o'clock, 12 o'clock, rock. We're gonna rock around 10 o'clock tonight. Put your glad rags on. Join me, hot. We'll have some fun.
Bill Haley in the comments for Elliot on the Into Death Arcway show, the song that was labeled the first official rock and roll record released April of 1954. Wow, still going strong, sounding fun. Speaking of early rock and roll, Roy Orbison's Claudette, we honor Roy on the 89th anniversary of his birthday on April 24th. And speaking of birthdays, happy 73 to Peter Frampton. Made all kinds of girls back in the day come alive, if you know what I mean, with Baby I Love Your Way. And Elvis Costello putting his signature on the Betty Everett classic, Getting Mighty Crowded. We can send that one out to the entrance into the GOP presidential field this time around. Motley Crue, indeed. And maybe also to the Donald J. Trump courtroom tour. He may find himself in various courtrooms from New York to Georgia to Washington, D.C. before all is said and done. We'll just have to wait and see. Meantime, he's a no-show at the E. Jean Carroll civil defamation slash rape case. They're putting her through the ringer. This is a very tough cookie. I really wish we could see this thing television, because it must be a very compelling courtroom drama for sure, but one that he deserves to get some justice. He is going off on this woman on his Truth Social, and as we said earlier, I don't think that should be allowed. The judge may come down, clamp down on him pretty hard. We'll see. What say you, Twitter, AB Wright, phone line 347-857-4505, should you find yourself tagging along for the Thursday, April 27th ride. We have the Facebook page and the PopNet chat box available, too. Blue Blogger says, as far as Joe Tacopina is concerned, you must know that he is on the social media arguing that E. Jean Carroll didn't scream, so it can't be rape. That's crazy. He also says he never met her and he's not his type, but when shown a picture of his ex-wife, Marla Maples, he thought, or when he saw a picture of her, he thought it was Marla Maples, his ex-wife. How do you feel to defend him, Tacopina? It must be sleazy, right? Yeah, well, exactly. These people do it. Everybody deserves a defense, that's for sure. And Carlos says, he's such a chicken, he'll never come to court, he won't testify, but he's too busy going golfing in Scotland. Yeah, I mean, it is crazy. I guess with a civil case, he doesn't have to show. He does have representation there. But again, because of the preponderance of evidence thing, I think he's going to go down with some fine. Now, it's not going to be, as my producer Trudy Hart likes to say, he wants to see her, see him in an orange jumpsuit and handcuffs. That's not going to happen. But there's going to be some penalty to pay, I think, and they keep mounting. I don't know if it matters as far as he's concerned. I mean, we remember years back, if a politician made a gaffe, they could be out on their arse, if you know what I mean. But for Trump, the Access Hollywood tapes, which apparently are going to come in, as well as other women that he has assaulted, who he always says his defenses are not my type. Of course, rape is a crime of power anyway, and these are people that we're talking 20 years ago when it happened, regardless of what they look like. It's outrageous. His behavior, his own comments may come back to haunt him, but we'll all have to see how it all plays out. Fascinating indeed. I want to give a quick shout-out to the Inspiration to Action Sean's Success Story. It's Maura in Marlborough, New Jersey, who writes in, thanks so much for the push. I'm digging deep into a memoir. It's tough slogging, but the journaling helps keep me on pace. It's a tough project indeed. Hey, you know what? I know that, Maura, especially when stuff is so personal. I mean, writing takes a lot of courage and discipline to begin with, but when you're dealing with stuff that's really personal, even harder. So keep going. And keep us posted as well. Inspiration to Action. Hey, if it's worked for you, I'd love to give you a shout-out. You deserve it. You're also spiriting other folks on. If you need a push in the right direction, let's start a creativity coaching counseling conversation. First one you know is on me. Give me a couple of weeks to connect. Do so via the website, amybetharkawy, ARKAWY.com. Easy access via the Twitter feed. Hey, while you're there, why don't you check out my award-winning Eliza Gordon Mystery Series, available from ebook and paperback from Cozy Cat Press. We have other goodies available. You can chime in with guest suggestions, big story, forgotten 45 requests. And, yeah, we have links to the podcast and social media connections, too. So it's a one-stop creative shop at the website, amybetharkawy.com. Hey, thanks again going out to Patrick H. Moore, the author of 27 Days. It's a Nick Crane novel. You want to read it, find out more about it at allthingscrimeblog.com. Down and Out Books is the publisher, and we'll give you all those details on social media when the podcast becomes available as well. Appreciate him coming up and making that transition. It's tough. It's like crisscrossing in different waters, nonfiction, fiction. It's all the same, and it's all different, if you know what I mean. One final time around the social media horn. Anybody else want to chime in before we sashay out of here? On the E. Jean Carroll thing, a lot of folks are chiming in. Frida says, this man is disgusting. She's such a brave woman. I hope she gets what she deserves. Yeah, I hope she does, too. She deserves a modicum of justice for sure. They tried to sully her up by saying she had a conversation with George Conway, who's a Trump critic, and maybe her legal defense is being funded or her legal team is being funded by a Democratic operative. My response is, so what? Who cares? If he did it, he did it. That's the point. People always try to find these ways to dance around Trump's guilt by saying it's not fair to do it. It's all political. It may be political, too. It's all of the above, but that doesn't mean he's innocent, that's for sure. More to come, as we say. Hey, stick around, of course. Social media misses going out about my various appearances on the Arts Radio Network, PopNet, PodStream, etc. Trudy and Aurora take care of that. Friend me on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter. I am at AB Wrights. Our producer, Trudy Hart, is at Radio Trudy. Thank you to the booth, Trudy and Aurora, ML from TCS headquarters. And thank you. Drive safe. Play nice. Dream big. Come back and see us, won't you, on the AB Beth Arkley Show. I'll leave you with one from Roy Orbison's later collaborations with those great folks known as the Traveling Wilburys. Take care. You know I love you all.
wait for the phone to ring. Waiting for someone to tell you everything. Sit around and wonder what tomorrow will bring. Maybe a diamond ring.
Well, it's all. Somewhere down the road when somebody plays if you're by my side.
And you'll hear a tale of a nearly successful coup that started at the end of Constitution Avenue.
The Capitol.
A congressman named Loudermilk, a MAGA guy obscure, led 12 of his constituents on a three-hour tour. A three-hour tour. One of the guys who was on that tour, who'd learned his way around, came back with the mob the very next day and stormed the Capitol grounds.
We're coming in like white on rice.
It wasn't just a protest that got somehow out of hand, but a violent insurrection meticulously planned.
All hell is going to break loose tomorrow.
The president who would be king conspired to make damn sure the rioters would lay siege that day on a three-hour tour. A three-hour tour. The ship of state was nearly wrecked by the lawlessness and guile of Louder Milligan, the skipper too, the millionaire and the wife, the movie star, the professor and Marianne, here on Music.